When you think of space, what comes to mind? It's probably cold, dark, with things floating around inside a sterile metallic ship. But one Northwest researcher is focused on the sustainability of creating a little greenery in the great vacuum of the cosmos. Why? Because with long-term space travel becoming more within reach, astronauts will need to grow food to sustain themselves through long-term travel and on colonies.
Without plants, we're not here. I guess the key message is please be nice to your plants.
Yeah. Dr. Norman Lewis, researching at Washington State University, has been collaborating with NASA for decades for this unique guinea pig of this type of research. It's regarded as a major advance in space plant research. He talks with Northwest Public Broadcasting about it and his thoughts on the future of space exploration.
My name is Norman Lewis. Well, I originally was born and grew up in Scotland until I was the age of about just beyond 20, and then I moved to North America.
The plant that Dr. Norman Lewis is using for this experiment is called the thalecress, and it's considered a weed by most people. You can see it growing in cracks and sidewalks all over the place, even in the Northwest. This just goes to show that you never should underestimate where a weed can grow.
So the thalecress, the Latin name is Arabidopsis thaliana, which is quite a mouthful, as you can tell. And the reason it is used in a lot of experiments is it's a sort of model plant species, in the same way as you have the fruit fly as a model insect. It's also not a very large plant either, so it's not as if you're trying to grow a tree. And it also has a relatively short lifespan of just a couple of months, so you can look at the entire generation of this plant from seed to seed again. And it's one of the plants whose genome has been sequenced. That was done in the year 2000. And so therefore, its choice as a model plant really at a very firm foundation.
So that grows when you send it to the International Space Station, it grows in the advanced plant habitat. What does that help with research?
So the advanced plant habitat is a very sophisticated growth chamber, or sort of small greenhouse, if you will. This is a little bit different than growing a plant in a pot in the corner of your room. The experiment, from a NASA perspective, is called PH, which is Plant Habitat 01, because we are the guinea pigs in doing this.
Oh, really?
So this is the Rolls Royce of plant growth systems.
Yeah, yes. It looks very advanced.
It's very advanced, and it's got 180 sensors looking at carbon dioxide levels, looking at water, nutrient supply, temperature, light, a whole series of different aspects. So our experiment is called Arabidopsis GRO, and the GRO stands for Gravitational Response Omics. So basically, that again sounds quite lengthy, but it's looking at the effect that microgravity has on gene expression, protein enzyme formation, and the metabolites that are being produced there. Once we've completed these experiments over several months, there's a line of other experiments that are hoping or planning to go on to be carried out in the advanced plant habitat. So this is really looked upon as being a major advance. Now, from an anecdotal perspective, when people first began to try and grow plants in space, they had a number of problems with them. The plants very often didn't grow very well, they didn't grow very large. And the main reason for that is that water, instead of spreading out on a surface, like tissue paper or whatever, it's got a tendency to ball up, right? So at the beginning, water and nutrient delivery was very difficult. And they used to use material called agar. They could grow the plants on these systems. The water and the nutrients were in the agar, and the light was being provided. But now with the system that they've developed on the science carrier system, they've managed to, knock on wood, avoid all the difficulties that used to be associated with the microgravity environment. So we're hoping that these plants will grow just as nicely as we saw them when they were testing out the advanced plant habitat.
That would be ideal, yeah.
Nice experiments are always ideal, yes.
Yeah. With your research of plants in space, and particularly how their stems hold up without gravity, do you have any theories about what you will find, maybe?
So what we've done in this experiment is that plants produce a material called lignin, right? And you're aware of lignin, or everybody's aware of lignin when they take a piece of wood, you know. That woody tissue is reinforced so that the plants can pump from the roots up to the treetops, you know, both water and nutrients. So lignin is a little bit like the bone material in our own bodies. So one of the main parts of this study, well, it's two parts actually. One is that this multi-omics study of looking at gene, protein, and metabolites will serve as a foundational database for plant research on International Space Station. The second part of this is that we're going to look at sending up these what we call mutant lines for Rhabdopsis that are modified in the way in which they produce lignin. So some what we call wild type that produce the regular or normal amounts of lignin, and then we have other mutants that have got lower and lower levels. And the purpose of seeing that is what happens when the plant systems no longer need to have this reinforcement. So these same plant lines, if we leave them to grow on Earth, they can't hold themselves up, so they sort of flop over on the side. And we'll be very interested to see whether, if we reduce the lignin levels, these plants will still stand upright and grow normally.
The plants grow for 4 weeks, then they're frozen. When all the plants come back to Earth in their frozen state, they get divided amongst the project's consortium members. Washington State University studies the metabolic processes, or what the plants produce, like lignin. Pacific Northwest National Lab looks at proteins. Los Alamos National Lab and the New Mexico Consortium looks at genetic expression in the plants. And the University of New Mexico will see if there are any differences in photosynthesis while the plants are in space.
So once we collect all these data, this data is called big data because you're generating some very, very large data sets. Next challenge there is not only compiling and putting it together for NASA, but to try and tease out where the golden nuggets are in the data.
What brought you to this point in your research? Why did you choose plants in space?
In the early 1980s, I contacted a program manager, a lady called Dr. Thora Halstead. She was the greatest ambassador for the space, particularly plant biology program, but really biology program in general. She was the greatest ambassador and supporter of that. And there is no question that this program that's in place today is largely through her endeavors. So that was the beginnings of doing that. And we moved forward with NASA in many different capacities, grant funding, research, really until the Bush administration came in with wanting to go to Mars. And the NASA administrator at that time basically terminated all of the different research programs so that monies could be directed towards going to Mars. Well, unfortunately, that had a very negative effect on the community at that time, but it's slowly come back now, and there are lots and lots of exciting experiments that are now underway.
What do you think about Elon Musk and other people wanting to colonize Mars or the moon?
Well, I think if you look at folks like Elon Musk and SpaceX, when I first began in this area in the 1980s, and remember even there, it had only been a few decades ago when systems were going up into space. The shuttle came along and people were able to, you know, conduct limited research because it was only up there for 14 days or so, then came back down again. Once they got space station up there and then began to get the international components put together, it provided a basis for being able to do long-term, you know, studies. The thing that's really remarkable, and at the time it seemed problematic, when they stopped using space shuttle. You know, shuttle. Now if you want to see a space shuttle, you've got to go to a museum someplace.
Yeah.
And folks like Elon Musk came along, and you know, Branson, and Virgin Airlines, etc., began to have a vision of, you know, commercial spaceflight. And SpaceX has moved along, and if you watch what they're able to now do, they can send up these resupply rockets with, you know, capsules with all the cargo on them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch some of the fantastic advances that have made, I think from a perspective of any scientist, and, you know, I keep saying that science is a young person's game, and that my cutoff is 90, and I'm willing to negotiate that number upwards. But I think that what you will almost most definitely see is colonization someplace of some type, whether it's on Mars or on the Moon. And down in Antarctica just now, you know, they are having growth systems down there that are just testing out very extreme environments. Because the last thing you want to do is have a place, you know, attempting to be colonized to find out that, you know, one or two pieces aren't working because, you know, the temperature's not right or something along those lines. So I think we're well on the way.
Speaking of that, if you had the option, would you be the first mission to colonize? Or would you let other people go first and, you know, see if those two pieces of equipment didn't work?
Well, I used to do a lot of fishing in Scotland, and I found out at a fairly early stage that when the sea got really rough, the connection between myself and my stomach was not very good. Yeah, so I don't know if I would, I don't know if I'd be able to manage all the different tests, but. If the answer is conceptually, would you like to be able to do it? Yeah, the answer to that, yeah, that would be great. Yeah. Yes. One aspect of growing plants in space and looking at colonization and looking at long-term spaceflight exploration is, of course, the need to have fresh food. One way of being able to do this is, of course, to be able to produce, you know, fresh plant material that can be used and the carbon, again, recycled, to produce continual food during these time frames. And I think that most people probably don't immediately recognize, but the importance of seeing something growing in a spaceflight environment or in a colonization process like on Mars or on the Moon, of seeing something alive and growing. One of the funniest stories I remember is when we were doing some work with two Russian scientists, Galina Nechitalo and Alexander Mashinsky. They were doing an experiment growing onions up on their space lab on Mir. And this was the days before we had really good video Earth to space contact. They would get hooked up through voice, yeah, as we're doing here just now. And as the onion plants began to germinate and the plant began to come through, they were asking the cosmonaut, to provide information on what it looked like, what size it was, etc., etc. And he did this for quite a while, and then he was asked, you know, how are things coming along? And he said, well, it's going really nicely. Yeah, it's okay. Well, give us some more details. Well, you don't really need to know anything else. It's just growing properly, yeah? And he kept this evasion of what was happening for some time and said, look, we need to talk about this, I need to talk about that. Well, it turned out when they really pressed him for additional information, he said, look, I'm very sorry. I ate it. I couldn't look at it any longer. It was so appealing. And when you speak to astronauts like Sonny Williams, they will all tell you the same thing, that when they see these things growing there, it's fresh food, right? And it's got this aesthetic appeal to it. These are the things which are so important as we move towards colonization and really very long-term exploration. I mean, you can consider that there may be situations where a person spends the bulk of their life on a very long, long-term space exploration. And if you think about what that requires, it requires some sort of being able to recycle that carbon.
Yeah. Yeah. And even on, you know, Earth, places, urban areas, yes, that have trees, usually people are, you know, happier in an area where there's life around, you know, yes, where there's plants growing.
Yeah, yeah. No, if you think of all of our beauty spots, you know, without plants, we're not here.
Yeah.
You know, they're either our food or they're the food for other things that are our food, as well as the atmosphere that we breathe is because of plants, as well as medicines and a variety of other things. Yeah, yeah. So I guess the key message is please be nice to your plants.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to this conversation with Dr. Norman Lewis and Northwest Public Broadcasting.